On this Scottish Football Marketing Podcast, Chris and I were joined by Lawrence Brodie from Electrify PR. Lawrence has a lot of experience both from a club perspective and from being involved in sponsorship activation. This made him the ideal guest to talk about working with sponsors. Since we started these podcasts, we've had a few clubs reach out to us about various things. One of the common themes has been sponsors. Getting new sponsor partners and maintaining long-term relationships with existing ones is always a great battle for clubs at all levels. This Scottish Football Marketing Podcast can hopefully go a little way to helping clubs throughout Scotland improve what they do. The podcast has plenty of practical advice and examples of clubs and sponsors doing some great work. Lawrence was a great guest, providing tips throughout. I recommend giving Lawrence a follow on Twitter. His Twitter handle is @LawrenceBrodie. You can also find his company on Twitter too, @ElectrifyPR. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to episode 8 of the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. It's me, Chris Sampson, from Sports Marketing Scotland, back again. And we're here with Michael Bokel, as ever, from the Scottish FA.
Hello.
Today, again, as you know, we've been talking about topics on a weekly basis and trying to help all clubs at all levels of Scottish football and even beyond as well. Today, we're talking about sponsorship and how that can relate to all things across all clubs. And we've got Lawrence Brodie on with us today, owner and director of agency Electrify PR.
Yes. Good evening. How is everybody?
Good. Yes.
Very good.
Very
well.
Let's just get started then. Kick off, Lawrence, with a kind of a bit around your background, how you got into sport initially, maybe, and then the move to Electrify and starting that up yourself.
Yeah, I've been around sport now for about 12 years. I first worked at Heart of Midlothian for 6 or 7 years, latterly heading up the marketing side of things at the club. Went through some tough times there, as you can imagine, a different era to the one that the club is enjoying at this moment in time. Then it was time for me to get off the train. I think I could see where the train was heading a couple of years before insolvency struck. And since then, I've worked in an agency background. I started off with an agency called Merchant Soul. Then I went to Progress and set up Electrify just coming up 3 years ago now. So it's been an interesting road to where I am now, owning my own business. And I think sometimes with football, you learn more when you step away from it.
Can you explain a little bit about what Electrify does?
Yep, we are a marketing communications agency, as I said, founded 3 years ago, and we work predominantly across sport, community and third sector with charities. We work with public and private companies. We are very, very values driven. We've set up a model that's based around being very true to kind of who I am and who my wife is and who we are kind of as a group. We have three very, very clear values that we work to. We're hugely committed, we're incredibly energetic, but we're also really honest. I've worked in agency environments where I don't think the relationship between agency and client is necessarily as honest and straightforward as it should be. And so I say to people when I go into pitch, when I say I'm honest, I mean I'm quite blunt. But I say that because I'm giving you the best advice I can give you. Ultimately, you make your own decision on the back of that. So really kind of focused in terms of what we do. And we're really fortunate. I was counting up coming in today. We've now worked with 29 clients in less than 3 years. And we're a small, tight team. So we're really pleased at what we've done. We stick up for each other. We work really hard. We go the extra mile where we possibly can. And we've got some great clients.
You've done some work with sponsors in the football area. Do you want to give us a little flavour of what you've done there?
I think some of the higher profile stuff that's particularly caught attention from a digital perspective as well was the work with McEwen Fraser Legal around some of the activations for they've sponsored five clubs over the course of the last 3 years. I suspect probably one of the better known ones was last summer we we worked with the club, and I think this is a really good example of sponsorship and club benefiting together to develop an incentivization campaign around pre-ordering a new home or away kit, depending on what the club wanted to work on. And we gave away 100 golden tickets for kids under the age of 12, as long as they fit in a junior kit, I think we said, to play the first team. And that provided a real opportunity for us to develop content around that messaging, which was entirely aligned with McEwen Fraser Legal in terms of what they wanted to get out there as a brand. And we had some real success, most notably John Robertson's post-match rant at his own team after they lost, was it 20 goals to 5 or something like that? And he let rip at one, and it was one of those situations where it went viral, and there was coverage all over the place. So really successful. I have to say, I thought better content but got less attention was Neil McCann and Graham Gartland, his assistant, having a fight on another film that we did after the Dundee game. Neil had managed the kids and Graham had managed the first team, and Neil decided to pick a fight with him over tactics of the adult players. So we had that kind of stuff. We also had Tommy McKay, who became a bit of a legend. Tommy did not tell me until 3 hours before we were at Tannadice Park doing a halftime challenge that he only, I should say only, I sound terrible, but one leg, he was an amputee, and he'd won the competition and he hadn't said anything, but he sent me an email in that afternoon. And so I had said to him, listen, from my point of view, we're delighted for you to do the challenge. It's just, is there anything we need to prepare or know? And then he joked back that the only reason it would go badly for him was his fitness. It wouldn't be the lack of a right leg. And Tommy became a total sensation when he took a 10-second challenge from the halfway line and lobbed Brett Long, who was at that point with the club on Northern Ireland under 21 goalkeeper, from 40 yards. Which was extraordinary, and we had coverage in about 16 different countries, and pleasingly for me and for the sponsor, we were able to elbow the sponsor into most of those countries' coverage. So it shows you know when you work together with a club, with a sponsor, with supporters as well, I think really important, you can create some great stuff. So some good fun times we've had there.
What would you say then is the role of an agency in working with sponsors and clubs? How do you bring that all together?
Well, bringing people together, I think, is actually the really important thing. The benefit that our team are able to bring is that we have an understanding of both sides of the coin. So from a club perspective, I understand how difficult it can be. I understand the pressures. I have been there. I often say to people, particularly if you know they say it's been a while since you were in a club, yeah, but did you have your wages missed 11 times over the course of a period of time you're employed by the club? I get it. I understand the stresses, and I understand the strains, I understand the challenges, and I understand the result-to-result nature. However, I also understand from the sponsor point of view in terms of what they're trying to do and how they're trying to get value out of that sponsorship. Too often still, it's viewed about sticking logos on things. And you know, you guys, we've talked about this on through Twitter and stuff like that all the time. It is so often misunderstood. So sometimes my job is to try and help the sponsor to understand where the gaps may be from a club perspective, and equally from a club perspective, trying to explain to them in a way which feels manageable and not overawing, that actually, if we work together, we can have some good wins. You know, I also know when clubs are. One of the questions I'm going to pull back from what I was about to say. I'll maybe say something more controversial later. But what I was going to say was, I tell you, this is a tip that I give away for free. Whenever I speak to club off-field staff, the first question you ask, as you said to me both tonight when I came in the door down the stair, how are you doing? It's a perfectly nice, polite way to start a conversation. You ask a club person, and I reckon 9 times out of 10, or maybe higher, the answer to that question will revolve around the team results. Great result of the weekend. We could just get a win on the board. And going back to the thing I was talking about Hearts before, that wasn't what I was asking about. I know what the team's results are. You're playing in a, you know, likely a professional league, and I can see the results and I can watch the goals, I can see if you're winning or losing, I can see if your manager's close to getting fired or not. That for me is a wee bit of a mindset thing. If I'm asking, yeah, we're having a great time right now, hospitality sales are going really well, or we've just managed to secure a new sponsor for something else, that's what I'm asking about as a professional, because I can work out the other bit. So I may have gone off on one there. I did slightly say to you guys that might happen, so apologies. What was the question?
So what's the role of an agency in working with sponsors and clubs?
Bring people together. Bring people together and find mutual benefits. So the 100 kids game had a very clear benefit, that for those clubs to be able to sell 100 kits in the space of, in the case of sort of Dundee United and Dundee, easily within the day, in the case of Ross County and Inverness, easily within 2 days. The fact is, we all know how important cash flow is to clubs, and we're helping creating demand. And we know that demand is the key thing in terms of revenue, when people feel they have to make that transactional decision. So the clubs are delighted. From that point of view, from there, then we can kind of almost take on the next bit, because they're absolutely delighted to have been able to have that kind of success.
You mentioned when you were talking about Tommy and Dundee United as well, that you kind of got the sponsor out there and a lot of the coverage as well. You just mentioned in that last answer as well about kind of logos and brand awareness, obviously. What would you say the sponsors are looking to get from a sponsorship with a football club?
If we can speak about it more generally, if you like, there are still plenty of sponsors for whom there is an enormous amount of work to educate them as well. So this is very much a two-way thing. I think at times clubs all too easily confuse sponsorship and advertising. They're traded as terms interchangeably when they're completely different things. However, that same mistake can be made with sponsors as well, who look at it and think about, I want to advertise my brand. And my view on this a lot of the time is that unless you're going to spend significantly on the type of advertising that is week after week after week. So if you're doing something with Kenny Whitman and the football company, and you're going to put week after week after week, advertising can potentially work. Taking a board at a ground and having 450 characters on it, including logo, tagline, web address, postal address, telephone number. I've even seen fax number appear in it as well. I mean, you can't even read it, let alone have any chance there. So part of the time I spend when I'm talking to either sponsors or potential sponsors is to say, do you understand what sponsorship actually is? Because sponsorship is about a brand narrative. And brand is not just about colours and things like that. It's about a story about who you are, what do you stand for, and what do you want people to know and understand about you. If you can get that bit right, then you can be really successful. And I think that's where there's still very much a discourse, and that's right across the piece.
I've experienced this a few times working with sponsors in the past, and the importance of like authenticity between the sponsor and the club, between the two of them, and the activity that's going on. Just how important is that?
I think authenticity is really important with everything. In fact, it's so important with everything, it now sounds inauthentic to talk about being authentic, if you know what I mean. We spend so much time being like that. But I think sometimes you have to strip it back, and you have to realise that behind every brand campaign, whether that is a huge television campaign, whether it's a PR campaign, or whether it's a tweet, is a human being that's behind that. And ultimately, that human being sends that tweet. And so that to me is quite the important thing. And we talk a lot about tone of voice as an agency, and we don't sit navel-gazing on it. Anybody who knows me knows that that is really not my style. But we do talk about thinking about the words that we actually use and stuff, and we try and relate to people. And I think when you look at one or two of the interactions we've had with supporters over the years, that's worked quite successfully. We see a direct correlation between, quite frankly, keeping it real, being pretty human about it, and engagement and growth in terms of numbers. So I think it's really, really important. And it's one that possibly isn't as easy as people think, you know, but just be yourself.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you there. And I know I've had discussions in here when we're working with partners, and one thing will be put in a contract, oh, we want you to send X amount of emails on our behalf. Now, obviously, with GDPR and getting opt-ins and that, that's a whole different ballgame nowadays. But my biggest thing to them is, right, we could look at doing that if we have the right permissions, but surely it's better. I can guarantee a higher open rate. I'm talking emails here, for example, but if you are actually doing something around the national team or around whatever it is that we're trying to do and make it fit in, that it actually is an interest to the supporter, not just, oh, by the way, we've got this product available, or make it something that's relevant to them. And that's not always the case, but it's a big thing that working with sponsors. Do you encourage anything like workshops or anything between clubs and sponsors, or is it more just a sit-down meeting, calls? How does it sort of come about?
Well, sometimes we've done that. It kind of depends on who the client is, what the setup is in terms of where there is value from that side of things. I think we work on a kind of very simple structure that has four parts to it. The test is, will I get it right without having it written down in front of me? We talk about building awareness. We then talk about respect. We then talk about trust, and then we talk about action. And the big thing, because all sponsors, or many, many sponsors, want to be able to offer internally a tangible example of the sponsorship has worked very effectively. I spend a lot of time trying to remind people that unless we have properly conquered, firstly, they need to know that we exist. Secondly, they need to respect us. But respect and trust are totally different things. You build the respect of them, you think, oh, they're all right, they're not bad people. Then you think, actually, yeah, I like them. I like them now. I think they're doing some really good things. Then you can start to think about that. And actually, sometimes it's about slowing it down more than anything else and not rushing. A Scottish football problem, generally speaking, a little less so at the very top end, in terms of the partners you have at the Scottish FA and in terms of the biggest two clubs. But a lot of other places, the sponsorship deals are quite short. And short sponsorship deals rarely will deliver a return for anybody, because you're trying to gallop through that process. And when we go back to authenticity, am I allowed to say people can smell shite?
Yeah, well.
But they can, you know. That's that fundamentally is what it is, which is why I'm forever talking about the fact that you are better to wait to get the right brand, to get the right value, to get the right partnership, and the right length of time behind that. The most successful sponsorships of the last 30 years, and we could probably all write them down, and we come up with three or four names, are brands that stood the test of time and clubs that stood with them during the course of that kind of period. But we have a lot of 1-year deals, a lot of 1-year, 2-year deals, season to season. And that's very, very hard to promote growth. And that's a chicken and egg situation, because commercial teams are under pressure. They've got to get a target. And so they're accepting the first thing that might come remotely close to that. Whereas I think in the medium term, I don't even think long term, but I think in the medium term, over a 12 to 24 month period, if you define what your strategy is, you define your values, you can back up what the values are, having thought about that properly, then you will be able to go out and bring in a much more measured set of responses, rather than, oh good grief, here's somebody offering us 20 grand, I'll hurl myself out the window. And that's difficult, because that's not about commercial managers. That's about chief execs, chairs, boards, recognising that the route to growth is to be much more measured about it, rather than just running around like a headless chicken about April. And April every year is when I get the calls. We need to get somebody. If you've got somebody, anybody you could help, you know, why are you having this conversation in April? Because what happens is you'll find somebody, because most teams do. There are very few that don't have a shirt sponsor. But you'll be back, and in 12 months' time, next April, the same thing will happen again. So, but that's a challenge. That's a challenge to people at the top of these clubs.
Is it not quite a challenge from a sponsorship perspective as well, in terms of investing in the club. Like, why would you say they're maybe reluctant to go for a longer deal rather than just that short term one that you think maybe the clubs are looking for in terms of that quick buck as well?
I'm not necessarily sure that some of the people or some of the brands who are sponsoring clubs should be sponsoring in the first instance. I think at times they're potentially stretching beyond where they should be. So, and you guys will know this, that there's a very simple sort of bit of algebra which says for every pound that you spend on sponsorship, you should match it with a pound in activation. Sticking a logo on a shirt or on a perimeter board is fine, but if you don't join the dots, then it's pointless. And that secondary spend is really important. So what's the advice I'm always giving to sponsors is, don't look at the fee. Look at what the total value is that you need to spend to make it happen. The other thing that I stress about this as well is, and maybe we'll come on to this, but clubs tend to present a set of rights. So we want you to be the main sponsor of our club. We want, you know, whatever it is, we want £75,000, and this is what you're going to get. And it's a series of bullet points. Sometimes it's bullet points broken into groups. Sometimes it's just bullet points. The thing that I stress with sponsors, and by the way, you don't always get this right, but the best ones, your biggest brands, do this, is they identify what is it they want to do in the first instance. That then influences the rights you will need to make that happen. So there is no point in selling somebody, I don't know, 30 tickets to every SPFL match in Scotland, let's just say, if you are, I don't know, the investment arm of Barclays. Put, you know, your potential there is you want to look at high-end spenders. So it's about not necessarily saying the one size fits all, and that's from both sides of the coin, but actually looking in and saying, what do we need? Then you can use your agency to go and have that conversation with the club or the governing body, the rights owner, and say, right, here are our objectives as an organisation. I know the type of things that you're able to do. How do we bring this together into a place where it works for all parties?
In your experience, especially as you go down the levels, obviously clubs are looking more in the sort of locality for sponsors. Is there opportunity for lower end clubs to get a sponsor that's perhaps not in the locality?
Possibly. Possibly. I think it depends. I think you have to look at the locality. So I'll give you an example in terms of, and maybe it's not always about sponsorship as well, thinking about commercial revenue. So I was very fortunate that in the couple of years that Petrofac sponsored the Challenge Cup, I was up for a quarter final, I believe, between Peterhead and Livingston. And we went up the night before, and Petrofac had agreed to take a table at Peterhead's annual sportsman's dinner. Now, I have been to sportsman's dinner from time to time. I'll be brutally honest with you. I can kind of take them or leave them a little bit. But was delighted to have been given to be invited by the team at Petrofac there. And I also knew the kind of money I had seen spent at these type of things in the past. It can be a little bit up or down. I had to say I underestimated Peterhead. I mean, the underestimation of my career. They must have made nearly £100,000 that night on a sportsman's dinner. Now, I know that the likes of Spartans Community Foundation have a fabulous reputation, but that's based around their community foundation work and their charitable work. This was Peterhead Football Club putting together to fund all its youth teams and all its bits and pieces, but fundamentally under the banner of Peterhead Football Club and doing brilliantly. And how do they achieve that? They have a board that of business people who are highly engaged on a local basis. If you think of a board of, let's just say, six people, and if each of them can bring 10 or 12 people to the table in terms of that, you put on a really good event. And it was really good, but it wasn't super slick by any stretch of the imagination. We're not talking about big brand production values or anything like that, but it was a nice meal, well put together, and it's hugely successful. So for me, sometimes the question might be, can you get a national sponsor? But I think if you're Berwick Rangers, with the greatest of respect, the options are going to have to come from a major employer in your area, and that might be framing it around employee engagement rather than other things. But can you make serious money? Yes, I think you definitely can make serious money out of that. And I think that's probably more the question, if you like, rather than just, can I get a shirt sponsor or can I get a main sponsor? Actually, can you find commercial revenues? Avenues towards commercial revenue that can make a significant difference. And we know the type of funding you're dealing with at a League One, League Two level. Bringing in 50, 60, 70, 80, 100,000 pounds is absolutely game-changing in terms of the budget you can put together for a team on the park.
And moving on to content, we've already touched on it a few times already, but in comparing the club and the sponsor, whose responsibility would you say is to create that content around that sponsorship deal?
I think it's horses for courses. So if I am a major sponsor of the Scottish FA, and I'm aware that they have a very talented team in place, I have to say that, because obviously we're sitting around the table at this moment. But, you know, you produce some really good stuff. I think to myself, that's a starting point, because they have a relationship with, let's say, 18 players, both men's and women's teams. That relationship, therefore, allows you to open up things in a quicker avenue than if I bring in my team to come and film something to create a story. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that I wouldn't do that from time to time, but I think I would work as a starting basis in terms of things. But there are all sorts of practical considerations, and so it's about trying to work out what's best suited. So some of the clubs that we work with don't necessarily have some of the resources that the Scottish FA can have at its disposal. And one of the things that I say to the clubs, and I say it seriously, just in case anybody's listening, we're not trying to make their lives impossible. I mean, Tommy at Dundee, I've never come across, I mean, we come across people who are busy and who have a lot of roles at clubs, and that's a whole other rant I could go on about. But, you know, I say God bless Tommy. That is a person who is doing the job of about 17 people. And so me coming in and saying, I know you're very good at doing filming and stuff like that, would you mind putting on this, you know, thing for us today? Is a recipe to tip him over the edge. And so we use a professional judgment, and we'll sit as a team and say, let's not be unfair. And by the way, I don't think I'm just naming one club there. Lots of clubs this is a situation at. So the horses for courses comes in, that you look and see if you've got a resource there that is flexible and able to work with it because they're built in a way in which they can service sponsors, brilliant. If they can't, then I think you have to look at ways around that. And that's part of planning an activation budget as well, to be able to kind of get to where you need to be able to be.
And kind of the value in that probably activation budget as well, like, do you see it still more in the traditional side of things, or is it moving to even more towards digital now for you?
What's traditional, Chris?
Is this a marketing lecture that I'm in now? I mean, I would count traditional as probably the, like, still newspapers. I know that, well, I've seen you asking for newspaper clippings and on Twitter in the past as well, so I'm taking it as kind of that in this side of things.
Okay, so there are still clients, and I believe that will be the case for quite some time to come, who, particularly at the top of the chain, love seeing stuff in the media, because it's a very, again, straightforward, tangible way of saying we had coverage in The Sun and The Record and other major national newspapers. So I certainly don't discount it. What I challenge on the traditional stuff, and I'll come to the digital stuff in a second. So we have a number of clients that we work with now on a kind of comms and PR side of things, and probably more outside sport than inside sport when it comes to pure comms, if you like. And we've learned a lot over the last 3 years in doing that, that actually I think as a set of skills and knowledge that we've learned, transferring it back into sport leads us to ask some very searching questions. So the standing with a flaming prop in a picture promoting tickets for a game, if anybody can ever actually demonstrate to me that made the slightest bit of difference, I would love to meet them. I really would. I'd love to meet them. It is something which is done by comms people, usually to satisfy people further up the chain, to be able to say, we promoted the game, we got it in there. Okay, so where it's been really interesting, and we've been fortunate, we work with BBC Alaba, who are brilliant to work with, and covering women's football, both national team and domestic league, and are incredibly passionate, incredibly behind it. So we work with them from the broadcaster in terms of the rights holder, this situation, rather than the sponsor. But that's working with Scottish FA, Scottish Women's Football, at specific clubs as well. What we're looking at is far less of standing with a prop and far more storytelling. So my colleague, Izzy, who's done some really good work in this space, has been working on getting, particularly with the A-team players, working with Michael Lamont here, to get them into the front half of newspapers. We talk about needing to have them better known. We talk about also the respect that they can command. So we're thinking less about let's get them together or let's do something quirky or whatever, and actually thinking more about how do we tell their stories, because that their stories become a really good way for us to promote the fact that there is live coverage of these kind of games. And I think it's a real opportunity for lots of clubs and Scottish FA and the SPFL to think about that whole side of things, which is how do you influence other parts of the media. Then I think what's really important to understand is different audiences. So there are certain newspapers, I don't necessarily want to start naming them now because I love them all, but there are certain newspapers who are read by certain people. And I don't necessarily mean in terms of general public, talk about opinion formers, influencers, things like that. And so we might look to get a story into a particular newspaper, and we might be speaking to a particular journalist. There will be a reason that we have thought about that side of things. So again, it's not always the one size fits all. You know, you guys both know you have a sports media event, you invite people in, player speaks, picture taken, holding something, player speaking at. And if you're lucky, you get the crowbar, the website and the phone number in for the ticket. Which is fine. I'm not saying don't do it. But to me, there's actually way more imaginative ways that kind of stuff can start to be told. In terms of the digital content side of things, I think it's so critically important. Because that is the bit that I think connects with, let's call it, consumers. And if you're in an FMCG type of brand, whether that's alcohol or betting or estate agents or banks, retail banking, that's all about consumers. And actually, therefore, that direct relationship between them becomes really, really important. You have to produce meaningful content, though. And we see some good and bad examples of brands that are trying to build an audience, you know. What can you not do? You cannot build an audience around follow and bloody retweet. Do you know? And I've seen plenty of brands who are trying to do that. You build a brand by creating content that is absolutely directly relatable to the people you want to see it. And that is the opportunity in which to build things forward. So traditional still suits plenty of people. I think it presents more, let's say, I was going to say more modern thinking, but I always think when you have to say the word modern, it means it's probably not modern in the first place. But there is definitely a role for traditional. But I think if you want to absolutely touch the hand of the people you want to engage with, then digital becomes absolutely front and centre in terms of that.
How'd you go, right, obviously giving away too many trade secrets, and because that's what you do for a living, but when you're down at the...
Who's listening to this?
When you're down at... Again, towards the lower end, and you're not working with an agency and a sponsor, that's things. How would you go about making good sponsor content?
In terms of if it's a local business that's working with a smaller club,
working with the smaller business, what were the steps you would suggest taking to getting a good end product, if you like, in terms of content?
Yeah, I think ultimately, when we talk about creating content, I think everybody can create content. So right now, for example, one of our clients, lesser known, or not lesser known, that because they're well known, but not necessarily known that we're doing a huge amount of work with them. But we work with Cumbernauld Colts in the Scottish Lowland League, and tremendously driven group of people, incredibly passionate about what they're doing. You know, I've rarely seen more focused people in terms of what they're trying to do for their club.
Very ambitious,
really fantastic people, and ambitious not only from the first team perspective in terms of the league, but also in terms of their Colts and the community, and its engagement reach is absolutely staggering. However, they are nonetheless a Scottish Lowland League club and a charity bringing people in to play football, and therefore they work to extremely, extremely tight margins. So one of the areas that we're working with them at this moment in time is to build up a content team. And there are lots and lots of ways of doing that. You will know, I mean, Michael, I bet you get emails almost every day from people who want to work in this type of industry, doing media, doing marketing, that side of things, creating content. I get a lot of stuff as well. There are a huge number of people, and I've got a recruitment process on right now, which allows me to leverage it in, that if you look at electrify.me.uk, you can see our role that we're looking for, a really fantastic, talented graphic designer who can do a bit of film and animation as well with us. So yeah, I've crowbarred that in. Maybe you'll let me crowbar it in at the end as well. What were we talking about? I think I lost the thread now.
Talking about the steps.
Yeah. So one of the things we're working with them right now is on building a team of volunteers. So you've got a lad, Ross, who's currently doing a bit of work with you here, Michael, at Scottish FA. I know, because you asked me to give a reference for him. And as I said to Ross myself, through gritted teeth, I gave it, because I didn't really think he was any good. I'm joking. Ross first became known to us when we built a volunteer team for the SPFL Trust's Trusted Trophy Tour. And in that first instance, he came in as a volunteer. He gave lots and lots of his time. He made some lovely short kind of vignette pieces, and we liked what he did, and as a result there were further opportunities for him to earn some money thereafter, because we're not in the business of taking the Michael out of people forevermore and that kind of stuff. The point was, if you go out to market or talk to your local college, high school, and actually put it out there, what I will say is there's a lot of the clubs who are doing some quite nice stuff around it. You know, there's definitely, you know, things have improved. I saw Greg Mailer shared something from Brechin City recently. Yeah. There are good examples, and the clubs that are doing well is because they've reached out into that community and they've found people. These are not people earning, you know, big marketing retainers or anything like that. They're volunteers, they may be supporters, they're coming in, they're getting experience. So if I'm a small club that maybe looks at that and thinks I'm not getting much out of things from my side at the moment, it's not necessarily about trying to convince the club secretary he should take a camera around with him everywhere, but actually looking for those people and going out. And it's amazing how often people just haven't thought about it. Just literally going out and asking people. The excuse that you sometimes get, particularly with some of the slightly bigger clubs, is, can't bring somebody in here, you know, there's some almost confidential stuff going in. See if a member of your staff, let's say, divulge something that was inappropriate, the chances are they'd be dismissed. So what's the difference with a volunteer? And if you have a proper volunteering agreement in place, which is very easy to pull together, Volunteering Scotland, you know, cover this sort of thing, you don't need to worry about that side of stuff. And what you do is you let people with a little bit of creativity, plenty of hunger, let them loose at it.
That's a good plug for, we did an episode on managing volunteers, show two, I believe, so definitely go and give that one a listen with Colin Miller if you're looking at volunteers.
We did. We've touched on it again a few times already as well, but measurement is a big one for me. It's something I am kind of always looking at, even in my day job as well, but from a sports and from a sponsorship point of view, something that I think gets questioned a lot of the time, doesn't it, in terms of how does an organisation and or a club measure the success of a sponsorship?
And I think it's the hardest thing, particularly in Scottish football at this moment in time. The investment that you need to make to be able to measure it properly is quite significant. So when we spoke earlier and I talked about a pound for a pound in terms of fee versus activation, if you're doing it properly, then a good chunk of that second pound is being put towards putting research in place that measures your initial objectives. And that's hard. That's difficult because research is proper research, which is definitive, is costly. And I, by the way, I have, because I'm now long enough away from Hearts, I can probably say this. We had sports marketing survey work done on TV coverage and all sorts of bits and pieces. It can say whatever the heck you want it to say, because ultimately you're paying for it. So for me, the starting point is, are you clear from the very first post-contract signing meeting what the objectives are? You should be clear about them before, but the point is your agenda of that first meeting, forget who's managing the tickets or who do I speak to for this, that, and that. All important things, but come to that second. The first thing is, folks, these are our objectives for this sponsorship. And that's what we have to keep reminding ourselves. Because if you're spending $75,000 on a shirt sponsorship, which, by the way, would get you a number of Premiership clubs, you could end up spending the same just on the measurement. It's not an equatable sum, if you like. So sometimes it's trying to say, right, well, what are our objectives? And what we have to do is keep assessing the objectives. You might not be able to get the perfect analysis on the back of that. It's fine. You know, spending $20 million a year on the FA Cup, fine. Then it's easy to justify spending $100,000 on doing a proper research piece. So I think the framing of measuring the success of it has to be looked at in terms of the original objectives. So let's say you wanted to, as part of your campaign, you want to stretch out and build a football brand that you want to use on social media. You know, there are some fairly straightforward things in terms of that. How many people started to follow us? How many people engaged with us? Some sentiment analysis that you can do relatively straightforward. But those are the areas that you start to look for wins. And I think it tends to be fairly clear if it's working or not. But it's not easy. It's not easy when you've got lots of money. Not easy for pretty much all the clubs in terms of the values that they're at.
In terms of coming towards the end and any tips that you've got on making everyone's life a little bit easier when it comes to sports sponsorship?
This is more of a life tip than anything else. We all get a wee bit too close to things sometimes. You know, one of the reasons or one of the things that drives us at Electrify is we keep reminding ourselves every day we don't work down a salt mine. And sometimes that's not always easy to say to clients, but sometimes you want everybody just to take one step back. Because actually, when you work together and you understand everybody has different pressures, you're able to deliver some really good stuff. So I think it's much more of a human level as much as anything else. When you base things like that, then it's an awful lot easier. I think the second part of that is being very, very frank and honest. And that sometimes is easier as an agency because I can pick up the phone and I can say, listen, I need to be straight with you here. You know, they're not completely happy with how that turned out or what happened, you know, at the weekend. But I always make it very, very clear it's a professional conversation. It's never personal. It's very much respect each other. It's very much how do you find a way forward. So I think how you treat people will be hugely important. And you'll see that, Michael, with the bigger sponsors here. The ones with whom the Scottish FA has a really good, strong relationship will not be about the brand. It will be about the people that you're working with. When it's easier, when people are understanding, when people work together, it's much easier for you to say, we'll stretch ourselves a little bit more to get something done because we know it's going to work out really well. And I think for me, that's you know, Lawrence's life lesson for tonight. And I've learned that, by the way. See, when I worked at a club, I was a pain in the arse. There'd be a few people who'd agree with that. A few people would say it now. But you know, sometimes we get a wee bit too precious about all these things.
Yeah, I definitely agree on the relationship side of things. My background has been...
Not that I'm an arse.
No. But in terms of the relationship and building good relationships, you'll get more out of it. My background has been in agencies and digital agencies, and I've had to deal with clients, and you're trying to squeeze more out of them to get, not I'm talking about getting more money out of them, but actually just more two-way conversation and working collaboratively, whereas coming in here, I think some of the best work that we've done, or in my eyes that we've done when it comes to sponsors, is working together and having those conversations and then just bouncing ideas about. Whereas, as you said towards the start, you come in and you've got this list of bullet points on a contract. You need to give us 4 tweets a year. You need to send out X amount of emails. You need to do tickets for these guys. Like, that's great. But really, what is it we're trying to achieve here in terms of content? And we've tried to do through the past. And Tenants, for example, we worked closely with them, and I took 3 players to the brewery and did a sort of skills challenge within the brewery, because that was both sides open up to ideas and going, right, what are we trying to achieve? Yep, it looks like Tenants are very much supporting Scottish football, and obviously they're trying to sell more beer at the end of the day. But given that insight into the brewery and the type of brand that they are, because it matched their whole thing at the time, was here to serve. Obviously, they're here to serve Scottish football. And then with Adidas, we've done a lot of good social stuff with them in terms of shirt giveaways. And okay, it won't be seen widely by loads of people. It was very much an Instagram story thing. We did it in England for the game at Wembley a couple of years ago. And we also did it away in somewhere like, it was Bratislava, I think it was, or Vilnius, where we were there and we were giving away signed shirts. And it was very much a collaboration with Adidas and just getting some fun, great content that we're able to share. So yeah, relationships is a massive one, and I think the more you can have those sort of two-way conversations rather than one way just dictating the other, I think it obviously it's going to pay more dividends.
I think the stuff that you're talking about there is also really important. I mean, you said some people might not see that stuff because it might feel that it's sitting at a slightly lower level, but actually, if we talk about you in Eastern Europe, they are some of your hardiest supporters who are spending huge sums of money. Actually, there's a lot to be said for that type of engagement with stuff that might get to a bigger audience and so on. But there's a lot to be said from a sponsor perspective, because that's the core start. You can't see this because it's an audio podcast, but I'm doing a foundation sign at the moment. But it is, you build that up, and it's from there your supporters grow. But those are the ones who are spending, you know, huge sums of money buying shirts, attending matches, getting season tickets for Hampden. So I think it's hugely important. It's great when you've got the relationship with a sponsor who are not just saying, I want to get this to the biggest, widest, longest, hardest audience you can possibly get, you know. I do a workshop with charities now, and there's a slide within it, which is, it's charity comms professionals. Have you ever been in a situation whereby you were asked to do this? And it's a bingo that we play with another word before bingo that begins with B, but I'm trying to be more polite now. We talk about the fact, have you ever been asked that when you've said, right, who are we targeting for this particular campaign? And they start off by saying, well, we want young people. It's all about young people. Great, good. So what, we're sort of 16 to 24? Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, well, yeah, but we'd be quite keen to get the kind of sort of 24 to 39 sort of professionals. Actually, we probably need the middle-aged people as well. And actually, we should probably get the older, yeah. And before you know it, the demographic that you're working to could simply be summed up as everyone. And so I've done that with a session with 100 people, and about 85 agreed with me that they'd had that type of briefing from people. So it's brilliant when you've got sponsors who actually look at that and understand the importance of that segmentation.
Finally, just to finish this sort of segment, looking at it from the other side, what advice would you give to clubs to help them attract sponsors?
Okay, some really straightforward but simple important things. I think you A, need to define what you're selling. I think I have sat through a number of presentations in recent years from a number of clubs where, and it's very difficult for me to say in that situation because I'm there with a client, but I want to say to them, I have no idea what you're selling. I have no idea what your values are. I have no idea what it is that we are being asked to buy into. So that's the first thing. Second thing is to define what your packages actually are. And that, by the way, I don't mean, going back to that bullet point list of rights, that if you take package A, we'll give you 30 tickets a match. If you take package D, you'll get 3. What I mean is, what are you trying to look at? what are the core elements of your club? So do you have a sponsor that is about families, for example? Have you got somebody that can support you in terms of digital and analytics and numbers and things like that? You know, have you got more obvious ones, somebody for beer, because you'll have pouring rights within your stadium? But starting to work through those different bits, because that then allows you to actually take a match day, and there's a brilliant diagram, Google it, it's something that Sport 5 years and years ago in a different world produced, and it was a sponsor's a sponsor's visual match day map. Huge. When you print it out, you need to basically the length of the office to use it. But it talks about fan touch points all the way through. And suddenly you look and you think, well, I could tape my mascots, I could tape my flag bearers, I could tape my furry mascots as well, and I could take my family stand, and I could take my pre-match kids fan zone, and I could start to package that up in terms of a set of rights. When you see it visually, you literally could take coloured stickers and you say, well, I'm going to make the family things are all red and I'm going to start sticking that around. So being really, really clear in terms of what you're trying to sell. Then I think it's really important that anything that you're trying to put forward, you can actually stack up what the cost is. I sat in one presentation where the number that was put in front of us was absolutely crazy. And I asked at the time, on what basis have you built that number? The answer, of course, was, it's what we think we can get for it. It hasn't been sold yet, and that was nearly 3 years ago. There's one thing about holding out for the right value, which is very, very important. Don't undersell yourself, but it has to be realistic, and it's got to be able to stand up to scrutiny. And then for me, you package all that side of things together. I'll give you one example of something which was, I can't say who it was with, but when Greg Miller was at Hibs, I went in for a meeting with him and Leanna and a potential sponsor. And firstly, Greg understood what he was selling. So a top professional, great presentation, very, very clear, very well built around what I had identified as likely objectives. But something else which I hadn't expected him to necessarily do, when he came in, he said, I'd like to play you a film first. Now, my instant thing about film is you're going to show me pictures of players scoring goals, it's going to be nice, it's passionate, there'll be fans jumping around, and it'll be all nice and good and stuff like that. And I shouldn't have thought that, because it was Greg, and Greg had thought an awful lot more about that. What he introduced, which wasn't necessary for me, but he introduced Hibernian in 3 minutes. But not just Hibernian in terms of we're a football club that play in Leith. Hibernian in the context of Edinburgh, where it stood in terms of capital city. He created this whole picture, which at the end of it, and like you guys, I'm probably a little bit cynical about some of these things. My sort of interest level for me personally had probably pushed another 20% up, because I suddenly thought, what a clear vision is being presented here. You know, of Hibs, of Edinburgh, of the city, and so on. So it was just really, really impressive. But it was a clear knowing of what you're trying to do. So for me, the kind of fourth tip in this is, know what you're trying to do and package it together the best you possibly can. And that might not be doing a really sort of glitzy, that everybody in house has spent a week putting together that film, but it might well be making sure that your PowerPoint isn't crap. Do you know what I mean? That you don't just chuck bullet point after bullet point, that you try and share a story of what you're doing, you're thinking about that side of things. And then the fifth and probably last bit of advice is, be clear about who you're targeting. You know, the number of clubs who I don't believe are necessarily using some form of CMS to manage this process. And I don't mean go out and spend lots of money, but even, is there a collective Google Doc that's being used that's tracking who's speaking to who, where are our targets, why are our targets, you know, the research that underpins that? Don't just send it to, you know, dear sir. So I think when you pull those bits together, I think any club can do really well. I think the size of it becomes irrelevant, but it is. It's spending some time and being committed to spending that time rather than getting drawn into match to match to match to match, which is what so often happens. And then before you know it, you're in April and you're phoning me.
I think that's a great note to finish that segment off. Obviously, we finish the podcast on things we like, but Lawrence, just want to thank you for initially. That was very interesting and very fascinating. I'm sure there was a lot there for clubs to take away. Won't put you on the spot just now and unless you've got a couple of things, but we, as I said, we normally finish on just things we've seen in general in the world of sport and online, and just to act as a little bit of inspiration. So Chris, I'll let you go first.
Yep, I've got a few. One is, obviously we're talking about sponsorship. I'm not entirely sure if this one is related to sponsorship, but it was just something I might have spotted that was. Would you believe me if I said that Kenya had an ice hockey team?
No, I would not.
So apparently there's only one, and they don't have anybody to play against. So Tim Hortons, obviously a big brand over in North America, flew the Kenyan ice hockey team over to Canada to play a match, and obviously videoed this and paid for all their flights, got some kits made up for them, got them out on the ice, and kind of put that out on social media, obviously promoting that. Maybe one negative of it is not really sure what the point was for Tim Hortons, and there's not there isn't really anything on the video about Tim Hortons at all. It's just them that have done it. So yeah, it was just one example that I spotted very recently. And I think that probably the other big kind of Scottish football story from the weekend we've just had, and obviously this will be going out quite soon after this weekend, is from non-league day, and Roma. We've spoken about them on the podcast as well, and they're kind of the darlings of football Twitter at the moment.
For some people.
For some people.
It can be a little bit much for me sometimes. Yeah.
Well, they've promoted St Anthony's, who are obviously a kind of non-league Scottish football team in the juniors, I believe. And they obviously won at the weekend as well, for non-league day, non-league weekend. So, yeah, just very randomly in true Roma style.
A couple from me. I've, on my Twitter before, spoke about the work that Barnes FC are doing. Very, for anybody that's unaware of what or who Barnes FC are, they basically take club badges and incorporate a band. So there's plenty of examples out there. Joy Division, for example, are on the Juventus badge. You've got Gorillaz are on Sampdoria, I think it was. There's loads. And there's loads of Skids are on the Dunfermline, old style Dunfermline badge, for example. So there's lots of examples. They're doing a lot for charity and created various things. They've started collaborating with various teams, and I think Barry Town was potentially one. They are now looking for collaborations, obviously with the charitable angle, but again, for doing something slightly different, raising profile, etc., there is something there for your club. Obviously, it might help with sponsor conversations down the line, but it's just something that started socially has gone on massively. I think they created these pin badges, one of the Frightened Rabbit ones, for example, I think was getting sold on eBay for £150. So some good work being done there, and there's potential if you think about it and it fits into what you're trying to achieve, there's probably something you can do there. And this other one, it's a tenuous link to sport, shall I say. In the Moscow Metro, they were giving away free tickets if somebody did 30 squats and there was a machine. So it was a very much an experiential thing, but it was all about this action and reward. Now, we talk about action and reward, and people use it for collecting data, for example. But in this instance, it was very much around the government using the metro to help promote healthier lifestyles and giving away. So again, when you're looking at what you, and it ties in a little bit with the sponsorship conversation, in terms of if you're looking to achieve something and your objectives are to get a certain message out or whatever else it is think about what you can do. And in this case, it was an action for a reward. So yeah, two very random examples there, but just to get thinking differently.
That's a really interesting thought as well. One of the key drivers in terms of Scottish government in this country is sport for good. And how sport can be have a real impact in terms of people's lives. It's quite a live example, but it's a space in which there's a lot of public interest at this moment in time. So it'll be interesting to see if that's something that that might appear over here at some point in some way.
Yeah, I'd hope so. We'll finish it there. A last plug for the job, Lawrence?
Yes, so looking for a brilliant graphic designer who loves some film and animation to join Electrify as a content producer. All the details, including the recruitment pack and the three things you need to do to apply, are on our website, electrify.me.uk. And of course, from there, you can also get in touch if you want to have a wee chat about it first.
And if you're listening to this down the line and the job's no longer there, I still advise you to go and listen, go and check out the work that Lawrence is doing, and visit the website, and you never know, there might be another job online at that point. So once again, Lawrence, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And we'll finish it there.